everyone. It's your host, Polly Siegel. And for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm a licensed clinical social worker, certified addiction specialist, and master level trained mindfulness practitioner. I own a counseling practice in both Colorado and Illinois, and I specialize in trauma, OCD, and anxiety. If you live in either of those two states, feel free to reach out to me for a consultation and we can begin the therapeutic journey together. Now on to the good shit. Welcome to season 3 of Shit Talking Shrinks. Gosh, I'm so excited. I will be featuring experts in the healing space, and we're discussing a variety of mental health topics, the human experience, and society at large, while creating levity along the way. Get ready to laugh, learn a lot, and change your life for good. Hello, everyone. Another fabulous episode of Shit Talking Shrinks. And I have an incredible guest. I know I say that every episode. I know I do. And now it's like the boy who cried wolf, but I really have a fucking awesome guest today. We have Britt Frank. You are a licensed neuropsychotherapist, the author of The Science of Stuck. Your work has been featured in Forbes and NPR and Self and so many other amazing places. And honestly, you're a fucking rock star.
That's my favorite intro ever. Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. This is going to be fun.
It's going to be fun. I knew from the day one of us texting that it was going to be fun. So your book, The Science of Stuck, and I haven't read it yet. It's on my to-do list, truly. I mean, I think it's such a pervasive experience where people feel stuck, trapped, can't move forward, not moving in the direction they want to, not achieving their goals, not feeling vitality. What is it about our culture where being stuck is just kind of the norm at this point?
It really is. And that's why I called the book The Science of Stuck and not How to Deal with Your Mental Health or The Science of Trauma, because being stuck is such a universal experience. I mean, there's a bajillion reasons for getting stuck as there are humans. But I do think that when we don't have good information about how we human, it's like having a car with no gas. If I sat in a car with no gas, but I never learned how to drive, it's like, oh, this car is stupid. This car is fucking broken. Like, or what's wrong with me that I can't drive? Why am I such an idiot? It's like, the car needs gas. And it's like, life's not simple, but there are tools. If you understand a little bit about the brain, it's like, oh, well, of course I'm stuck. Of course I feel this way. Of course I'm anxious and panicking every day. Again, it doesn't make it okay, nor does it mean that life is simple, but it does make our stuff make sense. I have never seen in my entire career anyone up close who did not, it's like, oh, of course, I get why we got here. There's no such thing as a crazy person. Why do we get stuck? Because we don't have better information, because the information is kind of outdated.
Right. And I know a lot of your book is rooted in science and research and evidence-based skills and tools that we know work.
And they're not hard. That was the thing that was so aggravating to me when I learned them, is like, I spent how many years as a drug addict, being a hot train wreck of a human, grad school, therapy, and like, this is the thing, really? Like, this is how we human? I was so pissed off. No, I'm just crazy. It has to be that I'm just broken. Oh, wait, no, I'm not broken. Nobody is. Cool. I mean, it's good news. And again, a book doesn't solve the world's problems, but it's a great starting place. And I wrote the book I wish someone had handed to me when I was 15, 18, 23, 31. Pick a year and like, hey, here's just like a 101 owner's manual. It's not the, here's how to unpack everything. It's just the, if you haven't read the book, you can open up a page while you're peeing, grab a nugget and go on with your day. Because that's how I do it.
Because who doesn't love nuggets while you're peeing?
Exactly. Half of the books I've read, because you have to go to the bathroom at least a few times a day. So if you keep your books in your to-be-read stack in the bathroom, at least you're going to crack them open.
I love that. I'm more of like a reader while I shit, if I'm being honest.
I have to focus on when I'm doing that. But when I'm peeing, I'm going to do that.
I love it. Enough about our bowels. Let's jump into our urinary tract. Okay. So when I think about stuckness, like in my clinical practice, it comes up all the time, right? I feel stuck at work. I feel stuck in my relationship. I feel stuck around figuring out these health issues. I feel stuck with my family. Stuck. Like, it's just in all departments of our lives. Where do you feel like the majority of people get stuck or trapped?
So like you said, there's no area of life where people are not experiencing stuckness, but 100 people in the room, ask them, where are you stuck? Everyone's going to have an answer. No one hears the question, where are you stuck, and gives you crickets, which is amazing. The meta answer to your question is the biggest area of stuckness is not realizing that we, again, my disclaimer here, and this is so important to me. My disclaimer is my work assumes you have relative safety, access to choices. If you're in an oppressive environment or like in a war, those are not the situations of stuckness that I'm talking about. I'm talking about if you feel stuck at work or with a relationship or with a habit, and generally speaking, you have some choices. We get stuck if we think it's either this or this. My family's messed up. I need to either fix them or just submit to their shenanigans. It's like, those are two options. They're not the only two options. Stuck becomes unstuck as soon as we realize there are choices. Sometimes the choices suck. Sometimes there's no good one. But as long as we're conscious of our choice points, we'll be able to keep moving.
I like how you said that sometimes the choice sucks and sometimes it's not the most comfortable choice, because I think a lot of times we try to inherently make choices that create ease or that are comfortable or that don't have any implications to them. And that's not the majority of choices we make throughout the lifetime.
Which is this like pervasive avoidance of discomfort. I was a drug addict. I get it. And if we can take this myth that there's going to be an easy choice, when it comes to family or relationships or work or whatever the thing is, you'll eventually get to good options that make you happy. But you don't get from stuck to happy. You get from stuck to, I have four choices. They all suck. All of them are going to cause pain in some way. Of these four, which is the best bad? Once I make that best bad choice, then I'm going to tee up another menu of options. And so making the, I call them micro yeses. They're like, if you can't make the big decision, break it down to the most microscopic thing that you can say yes to. Do I stay or do I go? I don't know. That sounds like way too big of a decision for today. But maybe your micro yes is you look at your finances and ask yourself, like, do I even have any money so I could go if I wanted to? And then if not, who's someone I can call? Or what's a book I can read? I've been stuck in relationships where that kept me like, I don't know how to adult and I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't leave this relationship today. That doesn't feel like a choice. I can start to get a budget together to figure out what does it cost to live my life. That is a choice I can say yes to. And as soon as we make those yuck choices, we free up the menu of options where eventually we tee up good ones. But the idea that we go from stuck to woo, life is awesome, is a big myth that keeps us going nowhere.
If I'm digesting this accurately, one of the processes to become unstuck is by making small micro movements, small choices that get you closer to what you want. Is that accurate?
If not closer to what you want, because I didn't know what I wanted, I just knew what I had was not what I wanted. And so stuck becomes unstuck the second we say yes to anything, no matter how small, even if it's a micro movement forward, stuck is just what it is. If you're making a micro choice, you're not stuck anymore. You might be going at a snail's pace, but a snail's pace forward is not stuck. That's just a snail's pace. But I would rather go at a snail's pace than be stuck. And I tell people, you know, the pace that you start at is not the pace that you stay at. So yes, going at a glacial pace, these micro yeses, it sucks. Eventually, you don't have to go that slow, but that's where we start.
What would be examples of micro yeses when it comes to career relationships?
So for career, you know, I hate my job. Great. But that's too big of a dilemma to solve in one shot. So a micro yes might be, can you even get another job? If you live in a town where you have one skill and the one skill can only be met at this one company and you have five kids to feed, your choices are going to be a lot different than someone who can do seven different things and lives where there's lots of opportunity and doesn't have any children to feed. So a micro yes for your career might be, if you had to leave today, could you even get another job? Yes or no? That's your micro yes. Just ask that question. Then it might be, do you need more skills and training? And if so, what are your micro yeses? Is there an online class you can take? Is there a book you can read? Is there someone with the skill set you need that you can talk to? This idea of, I hate my job, I want a new one, is too big. The human brain doesn't brain on big chunks. The human brain brains better on small yeses. So we really want to break it down with the relationship. my partner's an alcoholic and I don't know what to do and everything is chaos. Great. You're not going to change that today. But what outside the relationship could you say yes to? What self-care things could you say yes to? Our brain lights up neurologically different when we say yes to things, when we meet them. I don't mean when we're guilty and people-pleasing saying yes. But when we say yes, we're creating capacity. We're releasing dopamine. We're building up the ability to then fill the tank so we can go further and faster and make different choices. Micro yeses aren't sexy, but they do get you going and they're sustainable.
I'm kind of patting myself on the back right now because in my clinical practice, will create when a client is in, you know, a state of dorsal vagal shutdown where they can't make movement. They feel stuck. They feel like they're an autopilot. They're just in that shutdown state. I like to do micro, minis, and smalls. Like, what's a micro choice, a mini, and a small choice that help you create mobility? I didn't really know that that was backed by research, but now I do.
Fully backed by research. And they've done studies on it, saying yes, and then doing the thing. When it's small enough that you can do it, one, saying yes at all brings you into a curiosity state. That's frontal lobe activity, where now you're curious, you're doing the thing. Then you're keeping a promise to yourself. When you say a micro, mini, small, and you do it, now you've built up some, we talk about attachment. I love that attachment is so trendy. Internal attachment is just as important. And when we keep promises to ourselves, that builds more secure internal attachment, which then translates to the big steps. I love micro, mini, and small. Like, that's genius. Like, I love the alliteration too.
Yeah. And it's digestible and it's attainable. And I describe, because I lived in Colorado for 12 years, if you're standing at the bottom of a 14er, so that's hiking 14,000 feet, it's daunting. You've got to really have trained and prepped for it. You can't do that when it comes to life. We can't just take on the 14ers. Like, there needs to be the micro, mini, smalls, or these micro yeses that get you closer to climbing the mountain. And sometimes we don't even get to the top, and that's okay.
And that needs to be okay. I read an anecdote from an Everest climber who, you know, you get close to the summit, and then when you're right there, you have to take one step and then count for 5 breaths. And then take another step and then count 5 breaths. Because at that altitude, if you go too fast, like, you die. So what a great metaphor for, and then sometimes you can't summit because of weather, or, you know, situations outside your control. So the fact that you didn't reach all the way to the summit doesn't mean you didn't climb Everest. This is the same idea.
Okay. So in terms of other tools, right, we have the micro yeses. What else helps when we feel stuck?
Everyone hates this, but I will stand and preach about it because it's helpful. Don't start with why. Everyone, when they're stuck, why am I stuck? Why did this happen? What factors led to this? And I don't understand why I'm doing this or why I'm not doing this. When a building is on fire, that's not a good time to ask, why is the building on fire? When the building is on fire, we get out. And then once we get out and we get safe, then we can figure out what happened. So why is a great question. Like, you and I, like, built our entire careers on finding out why. Not when you're stuck. When you're stuck, the task is not why am I stuck? It's what am I willing to do right now? What is available to me in this moment right now? And then once you get unstuck, if you still want to know why, like, okay, like, come see us. We'll help you understand why. That's what we do. Why is not the first order of business. Don't ask why.
And honestly, when clients, humans, people in the world, when they want to find out the why, to me, it's just this attempt to gain control. Because when you can understand something and you can comprehend it and wrap your head around it, in whether it's pseudo control, it still feels like you're holding it, right? It's not you running around trying to catch it. I feel like whys are powerful to people because it's a sense of control.
And I'm all for it, but not when you're stuck. Because again, why am I stuck? That's a great question. And you will feel a sense of control understanding family of origin dynamics and attachment patterns and all of that, but not while you're stuck, because we can answer that and you're still gonna be stuck. Like, insight does not translate to action. If it did, we would all be on the move because we have more information available now than ever. We're all drowning in information, but information does not become transformation without an action. And that's where micro yeses get you unstuck. Ask why questions later. Like you said, they're important, just not as a starting point.
And so the better question to ask is, what am I willing to do? What action am I willing to take
and what realistically is available. It's like, well, what action am I going to take? When people come to me and say, well, what should I do about fill in the blank, career, job, family? I don't know what your options are. How do we decide what you do if we don't know what your choices are? And what are my choices is a question that doesn't often get asked. And that's an important one, because when you feel stuck, you feel like you have absolutely no choice. That's when you go into those fight, flight, freeze, hypervigilant states where your brain goes offline and then you really feel stuck. And then if you're in dorsal vagal shutdown, then you're physiologically stuck. We have to ask access choice points. So someone who's like fully locked in a couch response in shutdown, your choices might be right now, can you choose to flip your legs on the couch so you're facing the opposite way? Can you choose to hold the computer over your head for 10 seconds and then put it back down? We make choice points as small as they need to be till you can get to a yes.
This is just what's coming up for me, is sometimes the choice acceptance.
Ugh, gross.
Or no.
Yes, absolutely. And it's not acceptance in the traditional, like, I peacefully accept that this is happening to you. Acceptance that this is as shitty as it feels and that there's nothing to be done about it. That's a hard one. That is absolutely on the menu almost always.
I ask that because I think sometimes when you present or you explore the choices, none of them feel like they can really change the situation. Or maybe sometimes they can't change the situation. So then does it lead to this, I have to make the choice of acceptance or surrendering or moving through the discomfort of this?
It's such a good point. And grief work is a lot like this, because if you're talking, what are my choices when it comes to grief work? There's nothing to fix the situation. The loss has happened. The person has died. The divorce is signed, whatever the thing is. And so nothing fixes the situation, but choice points helps you move through grief in a way that does not cause you to get stuck and in that mental loop vortex of spinning around in regrets and shame and self-blame and guilt. And so, yeah, acceptance is absolutely on the menu for almost every, sometimes we can change the things. Sometimes we can't. Acceptance is always on the menu. I don't like it because it's gross, because it means I can't control it, but
now we all know Brit's trigger, lack of control.
No, I don't want to accept that. That's crap. I can change it. I can change it.
I can change it. I literally had this conversation with a client this week where I said, I'm finding myself struggling to accept what you're saying you cannot do.
Genius. I'm finding myself struggling to accept what you're saying you can not do. I'm stealing that. That's genius.
And he looked at me and he was like, oh. And I said, that's it. There's nothing to do with it. I just wanted to tell you that's what's coming up for me, man.
Yeah, that's genius. That's so good.
I want to take a quick pause to talk about our sponsor, a company called BetterHelp. It's an online therapy platform where all the therapists are licensed and accredited professionals. It's affordable. You pay a low flat fee for therapy with your therapist, and it's convenient. Do it at your own time and at your own pace, and you can communicate with your therapist as much as you want and whenever you feel is needed. And more importantly, it's effective. Thousands of people have benefited from therapy using BetterHelp, and we're really grateful to offer all of our listeners 10% off your first month. So if you're interested in receiving therapy ASAP, click the link in our show notes and you can get started. And you get to save money. So we've got micro yeses. We have explore choices. Put why on the table for another day. What else?
You know, self-validation is one that gets sort of misused and misunderstood. Validation doesn't mean justification. It doesn't mean excusing. But if you can start by validating, not co-signing on your bad behaviors, but okay, I make sense. I am not the only bad person on the planet or the only person who has done bad things or whatever the story is you're telling yourself. If you can start with, if I'm a human, if I am a person who has a brain and is walking around in a human form, then science shows that I can change to the degree that I have choices and safety and options. But yay, neuroplasticity. So this idea of, oh, I guess this is just who I am, is not science. You get to change things. You know, our personalities generally don't shift that much, but our choice points can. How we do our lives, how we think and which patterns we default to and which patterns we create. We have a lot more options than we realize. So you can validate if you're telling yourself that you suck and you're the worst person in the world. There's a lot of us humans on the planet. I'm sure you're not the worst person in the world. And either way, even if you were, neuroplasticity says you can change that.
And so part of that, if I'm taking it a step further, is the stories or the narratives that our brain tells us around being stuck, perhaps challenging those stories and narratives to really look at, there is more movement that can happen.
And the tool that I use for this, because when we're storytelling, if it was just as easy to just, well, stop telling yourself that story, right? We would all. So I call it making an also true list. So I have my story. Nothing's going to stop my storyteller from spinning her yarn. But is there another story that could also be true? When you make an also true list, I feel guilty because I didn't go to my family's house for the holiday. I'm a terrible person. What could also be true? It's also true that I did a good thing by honoring my boundary because I don't have the bandwidth for family stuff this year. Also true. And so if you can create an also true list, then you're creating room for more nuance and less black and white rigidity.
As the brain likes to go to polarization, it's the breeding ground for stuckness, because when you view things as this or that, there's no room for any of the middle, which is the gray, and life lives in the gray.
Okay, what you just said, again, I'm like, I want to take notes and write these down. Polarization is the breeding ground of stuckness. Yes, nothing will keep us as stuck as fast as black and white thinking. So true.
I'm just processing what you're saying because I think of a lot of the times when I have felt stuck, it's because I'm viewing it in a very dichotomous way.
Exactly. And it's, where can we get more movement? Where can we get some mobility? It might not be as big as you want or as fast as you want. But if we can get any mobility in the situation, that's going to free up more choice. It's like your GPS. Once you start driving, then it can reroute. But if you're sitting in park, it's not going to be able to help you.
Okay. I'm thirsty. Keep going.
Where else do we want to go? Where should we go next?
Well, I think we're just covering the tools. You know, we always have a tangible tool section, but really we started off with tangible tools from the jump, which is amazing. That means you don't have to wait till the end, folks. You get it right at the start. But yeah, what else when we think about becoming unstuck?
I think it helps to know that you can. And again, getting unstuck doesn't mean getting happy. It just means that if you're stuck, the likelihood that things are always going to be exactly this way, that you will always feel exactly this way, is unlikely. And so again, doesn't mean that you have to do the toxic positivity. You know, again, grief is a great one for this. You know, someone dies. It's not like time heals all wounds, because it doesn't. Even the most profoundly traumatic experience of grief does shift from time to time. And even if it's bad all the time, it'll be different bad on different days. It's incredibly comforting to know that stuck is often the story we tell, not the reality of the situation and the way our physiology interacts with the world. We're not designed for steady state. Stuckness is one steady state. Human brain doesn't brain like that. We brain by shifting between states, which is why those choices, even if you're shifting from one shit option to another, that shift alone can free up so much mobility in how you think and what you can do and what you're willing to do. The thing about stuckness that I don't like, but is nevertheless true, is often stuck is doing a service. And it's not about victim blaming. It's just like, ask yourself, how is this stuckness serving you? Because likely it has, or it wouldn't be there. You know, stuck can be self-preservation. Stuck can be a way to cope with things. Stuck can be self-protection. So without shaming ourselves, just asking, what am I getting from being stuck? And if you can't come up with anything, that's a clue that that's an area of exploration.
Right. This is a very therapist-y response, so you can throw up later. But I think of the times when I have been the most stuck are the times and opportunities for the most immense growth, the biggest transformations of my life.
Ugh, it's true. It's true. I feel that too. And I'll puke on it because it's still like, really? I don't like that. And that's the nice part. We don't have to like it. Growing sucks. And expanding and doing the things that we say we want require some discomfort. So I get to be pukey about that statement. But you're right. I agree with you.
Okay, so I didn't prepare you for this. This is what I like to do, is sometimes put people on the spot. But you got it. You have it. You have the ability. I know it. I feel it. I'm thinking I tell you an area where I feel stuck and we just kind of process it through life.
Let's go.
I will say in my life right now, this is the most free I have ever been. So when I was thinking about this, I really had to dig in the areas I feel stuck, which is a beautiful thing to say out loud. But the one area that's challenging, and I hope that this is relatable to a lot of listeners, I think it will be, is when I want something really badly and I'm attached to the outcome and I know that that outcome is going to be fruitful or helpful or really enhance my life, and I want it and I'm graspy for it, I have such a hard time not over controlling it, not over manipulating it, not over maneuvering it. Because when I'm in that state of I have to control and I have to dominate and I have to call the shots, it actually doesn't allow me to get what I want. So coming full circle, the stuck point is not taking action, surrendering, softening, and allowing the other parts to step in and actually get me closer to what I want. Does that make any sense?
That makes all the sense in the world. So I'm thinking how I want to answer this. I'm like, okay, how about we take this approach? Because again, there's so many ways of coming at what you just described. What I would say to you is I hear what you're saying and it makes total sense. Everything you just said was really abstract, right? Softening into something, letting go, and really like all of those are abstract metaphorical ways of describing it. Can you concretize? What does it mean to soften? What are five ways that you could soften? And then see where I'm going with this. If we take the abstract, because again, one of the enemies of stuckness is abstraction, right? I just need to let it go. But what the fuck does that even mean? How are we supposed to do the thing if we can't define the thing? And how are we supposed to get to our micro yeses if we're in this abstract type of place? So what you just said was beautifully articulate. What would it be like to take it out of the abstraction? What does practically what you're talking about look like? What are five ways that this would manifest in a tactical, practical thing?
You want me to answer it?
Oh, yeah. If I'm on the spot, you're on the spot.
Okay. So I would say that this mainly comes up in the department of love, right? Seeking partnership. And a lot of women feel this, where they want to find partnership. They want to find love. They know the steps, or they've told themselves the steps of how to get there. They just want control the entire way. And finding love is the most uncontrollable human experience on the planet, right? You really don't have any fucking control in that. But I guess the way that I explained it in an abstract way, like when I'm on an app, right, and I'm conversing with a potential suitor, and we're going back and forth and back and forth, and I'm like, just fucking ask to meet up with me already, right? Like, I want to step in and just be like, well, when are you available? Here's my schedule. Book a calendar event. You know, like, I want to get closer to it. Whereas I guess softening would be like not asking that, allowing that guy to say, hey, I've really been enjoying chatting on the app. Can I get your number? And would you like to go for coffee? That's where I feel the most stuck, because I'm like, just do what you need to do to get us closer to what I want, right? And I'm sounding like a psycho here, but that's the stuckness for me.
No, you sound like a human. So if the big thing where you get stuck, if what I'm hearing is accurate, what you want to do is soften in as defined by not initiating the let's move on this, like let's go, let's do this, and letting them initiate the meetup. And so if that is something that you're not willing to do, what's another step down from that? It's, can you wait 10 messages before you do it? You know, and while we're doing the actual in real time tactical stuff, then on the side, we'd explore the story of, well, what does it mean? And is one of your values to be with a man or a woman or some person who is more decisive? If so, that's not necessarily a bad trait. Like, indecisiveness drives me bananas. Like, that's not a bad thing that you want that. It might not be optimal that you're initiating it if you want that in your partner and they're not, but that's all side stuff. The real time micro yes for you is, if you're not willing to not do that, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to wait 20 messages to do it? Are you willing to notice the impulse to do it and give yourself 30 seconds to feel what it feels like in your body to have the, I am gonna text the thing? And can we build space between impulse and response? That's how you take that. And that's a perfect example. from abstract, I control and I need to soften, to I need to be with someone decisive and I can't tolerate the discomfort of the back and forth. So I'm going to try not to do that in a teeny tiny little step, which means just building more space in. And then I would also challenge you that that's a good thing, that you want someone just going back and forth is obnoxious to me. That's not necessarily a bad thing that you desire that, but that would be how we do that.
One, this example is just, you know, specific to me, but just how you did that is so profound, because you could apply that model, that template, to absolutely anything. Anything. We could just do what we just did. And I think that's what I'm hoping listeners can think on is, yeah, I gave my example that may or may not apply to you. You can look at your own stuckness and do exactly what Britt just did and walk through and find clarity. You know, I think it's the same also in partnerships. I hear this all the time in my practice. I want my partner to do blank. I just need him to do blank. If he just did blank, I could, right? It's that stuckness of like, I can't control this and I have to sit in this trapped experience.
Which then creates fight, flight, freeze, which then creates reactive behaviors, which then creates shame. And then we're off to the races. And so I hear it too. I just want my partner to understand me. Well, that's too abstract. Again, remember, abstraction is the enemy of stuckness. You can't fix something if we don't nail it down first. And again, not everything is fixable and you can't do this exactly. You can do a version of this with everything, but you can start with, if you're saying, I just feel like I'm drowning, I'm just buried by all my tasks and like I'm freaking out all the time. Drowning, buried, and freaking out are abstract. We've got to come up, what are we talking about? If we can take it from abstract to what we're talking about, then you can start to build your menu of micro yeses. Then from those, pick one and do it and then repeat. And that does get you unstuck.
Right, right. Those micro yeses create micro mobility.
Yes. Oh, well said. So much yes.
Okay. Thank you for doing that with me.
Oh, yeah. I also like to say micro yeses make micro messes. So if you're worried that something's going to go terribly awry, if you're doing little teeny tiny yeses, you're not going to make that big of a mess. If you wait 10 messages to initiate the meetup and that doesn't go well, it's not that big of a deal. A micro mess is easy to clean up. So micro yes, micro mess, micro mobility.
Okay, I know we're coming towards the end of this incredible episode. Is there anything that you feel called to say that we didn't touch on?
Life is hard. Life is complex. Right now, things are scary and things are burning down and it's really overwhelming. So reminding yourself that your brain is not equipped to take in every single piece of information that's happening to every single person, every single area, at every single moment. Yes, we want to be useful. Yes, we want to be of service and not just focus on our own little bubbles. But balancing that with, again, it's not black and white. It's balancing that with the reality of you can only do what you can do. So the world will be better if we're all not beating the crap out of ourselves with our inner voice. So give yourself a little bit of flexibility, because rigidity doesn't produce a whole lot of good.
Well, and really the essence is self-compassion. Because I think when we are going to be imperfect and we're going to continue to get stuck, to me, this isn't a recipe for elimination, right? I'm going to get stuck a million more times before I die.
Definitely. And with the shame thing, Brené Brown, who I love, obviously, is empathy is the antidote to shame. And that's true. Taking an action in the opposite direction is also another antidote to shame. Because if I'm spinning on the, I'm so terrible, I'm such a bad person, great. What, if anything, are you willing to do about that? Because the second you take a choice in the opposite direction, you're going to feel better. So if you're feeling more aligned with how you want to be, you're going to feel less shame. And the path to do that is through those tiny steps and those micro yeses.
I'm just absorbing all of this. I think we overcomplicate everything as humans and everything has to be complex. And really, this isn't that complex. Is it easy? Absolutely not. It's not as heavy or daunting or impossible as we think.
And that's what pissed me off about it. I'm like, really? All of this time, it comes down to make it small, make it digestible, find a way to say yes. Like, F you, F you, F you. The good news is there's almost, not every, almost, again, assuming that you're safe enough, there's almost not a situation where you don't have some choice. Again, it won't be a good choice or what you want. But we're not looking for good or happy. It's anywhere. Stuck turns into unstuck the second you do anything, no matter how small.
Okay, so if you've enjoyed this episode, share it with all your peeps that are stuck, because like basically all your peeps are stuck. Share it with all your peeps. And I'm so grateful you joined me, Britt. Truly, thank you for sharing your magic.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, we'll catch everyone later. I think it up. I think it up. I think it up.